Hey out there, everybody, and welcome to Caffeination 349. It's a day late and a little bit energy short, but hopefully you're going to enjoy what we got coming at you today. This is, of course, the Caffeination Podcast. That's why we labeled the first the episode Caffeination number 349, because there's 348 other various numbered episodes before it. If you are looking for this episode and you're confused as to where you might find it, you might want to head on over to www.caffeination.com. That is caffeination.com. It's a nice little synergy we have going through the whole thing. All right, so yeah, it's Monday, and this is the second week in a row that I'm recording on a Monday, and this is the second week in a row. I really don't have a great excuse as to why. I sat down already at like 10:30 last night and was sat down on the floor, was trying to get everything all together and put up in the right order and everything. Was working on the show notes and fell asleep. Fell asleep and didn't wake up until 2:30 in the morning with the dog laying on one side of me, the cat laying on the computer, and you know, cussed and moaned a little bit and went to sleep, and then woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning because the dog started barking and a whole bunch of other stuff. So it's been a crazy, crazy couple of days. We had a great weekend spent largely unplugged. I don't know why, but I think this is the summer of the unplugged. I think we're doing a lot more outside, taking nice long walks with the dog. We took the dog up to a park. It was great. You know, the boy came along too. But yeah, so we're trying to spread our wings a little bit. We're trying to branch out. The only problem is going outside and doing all sorts of active stuff is actually kind of tiring. So I'm going to have to start reworking the way the whole caffeine intake thing wants to keep going if I'm going to keep up doing the podcast the right way. So a thousand pardons, and today's show is powered by a French roast coffee that was, again, roasted in my very own backyard. I'm getting the hang of it. Today's roast was a Sumatran, so it's going to be kind of fun and earthy. Nice bold tones coming through on that one. I hate doing this. I really do hate missing shows, so we're going to just kind of ease over that. Hopefully I'll get better as this goes on, so hopefully everybody out there had a great start to your week, and we're going to send you right on into the rest of your week with a nice, interesting little show. A lot of fun little tidbits and pieces of information. We have a relatively even show here. We got a half of it geek-ruffed, half of it food and caffeinated bits. They seem to be kind of split right down the middle, and I'm actually kind of excited about a couple of the fun things that are in the food and caffeinated bits one. So there's some neat stuff to talk about back down there as well. So, this show is sponsored in part by GoToMeeting. It's easy enough to cut travel costs through tough economic times. You don't have to do any flights. You don't have to stay in hotels. You don't have to worry about gas. You can do it all with GoToMeeting. You have an easy 2-minute automatic setup, and I honestly tell you that anybody can do it. And even the best part about that is not like you have to install software on everybody's computer. So if you have a job that you'd like to pitch to somebody else, the attendees don't need to sign up to the service before they join your meeting. They can go in, a click, and they're done. They're online. They're real-time sharing your screen. Has integrated phone and voice over IP included, all for a one low price of $49 a month. With that takes care of unlimited meetings. It is a great value all the way around. If you just take all the money you'd save just from one road trip to, you know, all the time that it takes to do that, you would more than make it up just for 1 month of GoToMeeting. So I highly suggest you head on over there and check it out. For a free 30-day trial, visit www.gotomeeting.com/techpodcasts. That's www.gotomeeting.com/techpodcasts for a free 30-day trial. Now, we are continuing the Summer of Podcasts contest over podcastmadness.com. We are still in the midst of week two, and our week is fast approaching, so you have just a little bit of time left to head on over there and check out the rest of the shows that are doing it for this week. But don't take my word for it. I think you should take Jeffrey Power's word for it, because he seems to do a little bit better of a job than I end up doing. So here is Jeffrey Powers from the Geekazine podcast to let you know exactly what's going down in the Summer of Podcast contest.
Hey everybody, this is Jeffrey Powers, and this is the Summer of Podcast contest. This week, the contributors are Jesus Geek, Geek News Central, my show, Geekazine, and Buana.org Radio. Just go to podcastmadness.com, listen to their shows, enter in the codes that you hear from their shows, and you can be eligible for some great prizes. Thanks to all the podcasts that are being contributors to the show, and good luck in the Summer of Podcast contest.
All right, thank you, Jeffrey, very much. He's doing yeoman's work over there, keeping everything up and running, so I got to thank him, and head on over there and check out his show, not only because he's doing the second week of the codes, and you can get all kinds of cool stuff by listening to the different shows that he listed, but also because he's doing a great thing for everybody over at Tech Podcast who's enjoying this contest here. All right. We have a ton of great, cool stuff to talk to you about today. The first thing we're going to talk to you a little bit about, we have briefly mentioned Google's OS. Now, again, I'm going to stress a couple little things that people in the news media seem to be kind of glossing over. Google is not putting out a desktop OS here. This is not an OS designed for, you know, doing Photoshop work and stuff like that. This is an OS designed for roughly the 60% of the people who just turn on their computer and go online. This is a, you know, perfect OS for kiosks, for netbooks, for grandmothers who only want to email their kids and, you know, their grandkids who want to see pictures of people online. This is a perfect OS for simplistic right onto the net. What it's being done is they're building an open source operating system that's being built right on top of a regular Linux kernel that is going to allow somebody to boot up incredibly quickly and get online and use the rest of Google's resources. I mean, or anything else you want to find online, but you can bet there's going to be heavy tie-ins to things like Google Docs, which I love, you know, Gmail, and all the other wonderful applications that Google has put out, despite whether or not they're currently in beta, but you can kind of get the idea behind this. But there are a couple little issues. Now, here's the biggest problem with the open source community, and in case you are unaware of what open source is basically the code that gets written that does anything out there. If you consider your piece of program open source, that means that you actually post the plain text code online so that people can look at it. Now, it does not necessarily mean that people have the right to edit it and do whatever they want to it. There's certain limitations, and you know, you can't profit off of somebody else's work unless it's under a certain licensing. And it's all licensing, and it's not like it's complete laissez-faire. It's not like complete Wild West out there. There are rules, and they all have to be followed, depending on which licensing scheme you decide to go under. You could do under the GNU Public License 2 or 3. You could go under you know, copyleft. There's a whole bunch of different things that are out there that deal specifically with licensing. But that's not what we're here to talk to you today. Today we came to talk to you about the draft, but not really. Today what we're talking to you about is that the open source community, there's a little bit of pushback against this because more often than not, people who are interested in open source are also interested in privacy. They don't like the idea that this is not saying that Google is doing this, but there's an interesting article over at PC World that actually kind of got me thinking. People always ask me, like, I was asked in a meeting one time, I said, how can Google do Gmail for free? Why would they do it? Well, they're selling ads on Gmail's pages. I mean, so in some form or another, they have to have a bot that reads your email. So, as benign as they say it is, you have to understand to a certain point that they have something culling through your email, not trying to find identifiable information or anything like that, but they're saying, you know, their entire motto, their entire credo is do no evil. So they're just trying to make money off you by, you know, scoping through. So my inbox is flooded with coffee ads, and it's funny, whenever an email comes in with a strange subject or something like that, I'm not talking something that gets flagged as spam, but I'm talking about, you know, like one of my friends who sends me a joke or something like that. During the last election, every once in a while, somebody would send me a political joke, and then political ads would pile up out the yin-yang. So it's very sensitive to whatever's happening and whatever's now. So especially, I think it gives more credence, more weight to things that, like, if you star a message and say this is an important message, that means whatever the content of that message actually gets higher ratings in their ads to you than other messages that are not starred. So if I have 50 messages that all talk about coffee and none of them are starred, trust me, there are messages that talk about coffee that are starred, and I have 2 messages that are starred that talk about vodka or scotch or something like that, chances are I'm probably going to see more scotch article or links and stuff like that than I am going to be seeing anything else. Google has a massive database of information. If you sign into your Google account and then do searches, there is a search history of you. If you really want to see how weird you are, try and piece together who you are by going in and checking out your go to accounts.google.com and check out. You can see your web history. You can actually erase it as well. It takes a little bit, but you know, if you're concerned about people finding that kind of information out about you, It's something you might want to take a look at. But what we're talking about here is that there is the possibility that Google, first and foremost, is going to be releasing the Chrome OS for free. But there is the possibility that they're going to pay for it basically by tracking what you do. Now, this has not come out and said that, yes, this is going to be how it happens. And there's a bunch of different interesting points that they actually make about the open source community and whether or not they're actually going to embrace Chrome. First of all, because it's going to include proprietary technologies. So there is no high-quality open source alternative to Flash right now. Basically, if you want everything to be compatible with sites that were designed in Adobe Flash, unfortunately, you need to use a Flash plugin. And Flash is closed source. So there's certain limitations with that. Like, there's a lot of distributions out there that use software that's only open source. So, for instance, I think there's different little check boxes that you can say, you know, I only want packages that are open source, or they can't include something automatically because it's closed source, depending on the license they go with. And now I'm trying not to kind of overwhelm you with the open and closed and all that other stuff. I'm just trying to give you a little bit of a background as to why there might be some issues. The second little thing that they're talking about is that the Chrome OS might be a way to take away your privacy. So it might be an extension of that thing that I was talking about with the web history. So it's like not only where you go online, but your habits overall. It's just a way to build their database. The more complete the database is in regards to you, the better they are able to tailor ads to you. The better they are able to tailor ads to you, the better and higher rate they can sell to other people. Now, that's not necessarily saying that there's going to be some massive auction out there where they're saying, okay, I have Paul up on here. Who will give me $5 for Paul? Who will give me $5.56? You know, where it's going off like a rapid-fire auction. It's not saying, you know, we have Paul over here who likes coffee, Ashley over here who likes monkeys, and somebody else over here who likes that. What they're saying is we have X number of people who are all very interested in coffee, and it's not just that they're very interested in coffee, but there's a high probability that not only are they interested in coffee, but they are routinely interested in coffee. These are people who are like super consumers of coffee. So this would be a good thing. This would be a good fit for your budget. So they can sell at that as a higher rate because it's more interested parties than if they were just, you know, basically, if you buy an ad on TV, you know, unless you know the demographics of the show, then people don't understand what to sell to you. I mean, for instance, you could be selling things on Fear Factor and trying to target a demographic that doesn't watch it. I'm pretty sure that there's probably not an incredibly large over 80 demographic that's watching Fear Factor, so you're probably not going to see a lot of Life Alert commercials on Fear Factor. Or, you know, you can easily extrapolate that onto anything else you want. But that's how internet marketing works. And it's always incredibly revealing when you start telling people about that, because nobody really takes it that far. Nobody really kind of brings it to that. Now, the next little thing they talk about over in the article is that Google is big, hence Google is evil. There's not a lot of people out there in the open source community or Linux geeks in general that are really fond of big corporations. Now, Google is in fact a corporation, despite the fact they give away a ton of stuff for free. There's starting to be a little bit of a Big Brother sentiment associated with them, because not only do they have all this information about you, but they are making scads of cash. So how are they making this money, and you know, how is it being related to you, and if you were the vehicle for their profit, how is that right? So there's a lot of people that might have issues with that. And then the other thing that people are thinking is that Chrome OS could possibly destroy desktop Linux. Now, I'm not sure exactly how this is going to work out, because yes, you could install Chrome OS on a desktop, but I don't think it's going to replace a large part of the people who are actually using desktop Linux right now. Because those people necessarily, like the majority of those people, aren't really the kind of people who only are going to go on the internet. There's a lot of other people out there who that would fit the demographic for that. And the other thing that they have up here is that Chrome OS is not a community Linux. So it's not like you're going to be able to submit packages and everything else like that. You're not going to be able to change it. It does not go as the community wants it to. It's not a whim-driven software. It's actually a vehicle for a company to do something. So it's their inroad into the operating system thing, but that's just a little bit of an overview as to how there might be issues with the open source community and how they might view Chrome OS. So, there you go. I really don't like Chrome OS as the the name for the operating system. I like the name for the browser. I think it's a good branding for the browser, but I don't necessarily think it fits the OS yet. I hope they just stick with Google OS or something like that. I just think it would work a little bit better. All right, now I'm a huge fan of the Tour de France. I've been watching online when I can. I was watching at home when I was at home, and one of the interesting things is somebody sent me a link to something called Road ID. Now I have a lot of friends who take long trips on bicycles, and I have a lot of friends who run at night, and I myself have been walking around at all kinds of hours of the day and night, walking the dog, and not nearly as far as distances as some of my friends do, but I thought this was a kind of an interesting idea. This is a ID bracelet that you wear, and it has two different versions. The one version, it's just like a little nylon strap that you can put on there. The one version has, your name, has a bunch of lines of customizable text, has your home phone number, contact information, and any kind of little thing you put at the bottom. On the back of it actually has a individual PIN number or ID number and a number that they can call. The other version of it, the interactive version of it, doesn't actually have your name or anything else like that on it. What it does is it says for ID information, call, and then they give a phone number. And or you can go to myroadid.com, put the serial number and PIN that's on the back of the tag in there. So either one of these, like if you're worried about privacy, the original is probably the better one for you. But if you're worried about privacy, the interactive one is probably better for you. The interactive one also has the ability to actually be updated, so you can keep like a list of different things and change it. Unfortunately, the original one, unless you feel like buying a new one, is pretty much stationary. The cool thing about this is I was actually looking over there and was looking at some of the testimonials, and they're actually kind of stunning, and it's making me lean towards actually buying one of these. I wanted to kind of put it out there because I thought this was cool and wanted to see any other people that were interested in these, just because I think it's interesting. But basically, they say this ID speaks for you when you can't. So they have a lot of stories about people who were either running or on marathons or biking, and they got in some kind of accident, and the hospital called this number, and they were able to locate their loved ones when they didn't have any readily available identification on there. In fact, some of the times the hospital has actually ignored the identification that was in their wallet and just called the road ID number because it actually had the emergency contact information. They also sell stuff like, pouches for your shoes and other things like that, and the interesting little light that you can clip on if you're going to be running all night. So I thought that was really kind of cool and interesting and wanted to share it with everybody out there. All right, now the next little thing we have up for you here is one of my buddies sent me an interesting little flash game, and I've started to see a lot of these. It's like teaching via flash. This one's called Oilgarky, and the idea in the game is actually to kind of make you hate yourself. The idea in the game is to make as much money off oil as possible. So you have different locations around the world. You can treat the people in all sorts of nasty ways. You can destroy rainforest. You can search for oil under the Alaskan wilderness. You can kill caribou. I mean, it's all slightly indirect until you get farther. I actually ended up causing the apocalypse. It was mutually assured destruction around 2082. So, see how far you can get and how much money you can get. I thought it was kind of interesting. It kind of rides on the coattails of that other Flash game that was going around where you actually get operated a fast food joint which was run by an evil clown. I'm pretty sure you could probably see the symbolism just barely hidden in that one. Things like, force feeding the cows. It's the kind of things that make you want to hate or make you want to react poorly to the industries that they're kind of lampooning. So I thought it was interesting. It's actually kind of an addicting game as well. It's actually really easy to play. So you can head on over there and check that out. All right, now the other cool thing that's happened recently that I saw was local public transit company SEPTA is going to be added to Google Transit. Now, this is a great, great thing for me. It's actually kind of irritating to me that it wasn't in there. I don't know. I know the original city that they actually had in there was Portland, Oregon. I don't know why Portland was so ahead of the times, but, kudos to them. Google Transit is now going to be available, stage one version of it anyway, in Google Transit, so it's going to be kind of cool. They have all the stops and all the scheduling information up there. Phase two is what they're saying is they're actually going to be geocoding 1,500 plus bus stops, and so you're actually going to be able to tell where the buses are and stuff like that. I'm not really sure how everything's going to work in phase two, but it's kind of cool, and we're now one of the cities that you can move around on the map and actually head on through, plan a trip on public transportation. So I thought that was really cool, wanted to pass it along to everybody out there. All right, next little thing we have up for you here. One of my friends on Facebook actually posted this up, and I had to share it with everybody else. It says, time travel problems, put this poster up in your time machine. It basically gives you a cheat sheet for how to do absolutely everything that you could possibly imagine. So let's just say you get dumped off in the 13th century. They give you the secret of heavier-than-air flight. They give you the secret of what penicillin bacteria looks like under a microscope. They tell you how to pasteurize milk. You can run electricity through tungsten to get light bulbs, just in case you didn't know. If you run electricity back and forth along a wire with enough power, you've invented radio. They tell you to take credit for all these cool things, so you can be the Forrest Gump of the now if you find a way to go back into the past, just with this handy little sheet. So I thought it was pretty interesting and cool. So they say hang this thing up in your time machine. It tells you how to do pretty much everything with flight, technology, chemistry, and health. I kind of thought this was cool. I think it would be pretty funny to stick it in somebody's locker just to show them what it was, but hey. All right, next little thing we have up for you here isn't really geeky, but it's awesome nonetheless. It's an awesome sandbox, pirate style. This is called a Kidcraft Pirate Sandboat. Now, it's a sandbox that is shaped like a small wooden boat. There's a little bench in the back, there's a flag, and there's a cool little canopy over the top of it. They show you a little girl playing. I have no other information on it other than the fact that it is awesome, and it's $202. So, I don't remember exactly how much regular sandboxes were, but if my kid wanted a sandbox, I would definitely buy him a pirate sandbox. So I just thought that was interesting and wanted to pass it along. Next little thing up here, we have a $27 calculator. Well, it's a regular calculator. It has all the standard functions that you could possibly imagine, except for the fact that it looks like a big Lego brick. There you go. Now it's worth $27. Except all of the little knobs that are usually on a Lego brick are the buttons. So, yeah, it's one of those things where you want to smack yourself on the forehead and say, why didn't I think of that? Because it just perfectly kind of coincides with what it is. There's an angled block at the very back. The one that they show you here is a blue base with a white angled block at the back, and the display is actually on the angled block. This is the perfect little gift for somebody out there who really is into Legos and still needs to be a little bit of a math geek at the same point in time. I think it'd be kind of interesting to see if they could have a Lego graphing calculator, but you know, that might be reaching beyond. All right, next little thing up here. Now that we have a dog, we have a lot more issues with the rugs. Either the dog will knock over a grape juice or something like that, or it'll steal a chocolate popsicle or something like that and run across the floor. So there's been a lot of rug cleaning going on around here. Well, I don't need to do this anymore. Apparently, they now have rug bandages. If you have a tear in your carpet or something like that, you too can buy these gigantic band-aids for your carpet. I don't know why you would do this, but I think it's pretty funny. I think this would look really cool in a doctor's office, where, you know, just kind of have like an offset band-aid in the middle of the hallway as you go down, especially a pediatrician. I just think that that would be pretty funny and cool. They don't know when they're going to be available, but they look like a giant band-aid. What else do you need? All right, moving right along, how to teach programming to kids via Xbox. They're saying they're calling this generation's Lego, or sorry, not this generation's Lego. This generation's Logo on steroids. So if you remember Logo from way back in the 90s, Logo was I think it might have been in the 80s too, I'm not really sure. But Logo was a graphic program that allowed people to program in Pascal for all intents and purposes and move a turtle around the screen to make different shapes and to do a different animation. It was a rudimentary way for people to manipulate things on the screen. Now it's one of the, it's the first computer language that I ever knew, so it has a special place in my heart. I actually think it's kind of an interesting comparison between the two. But there's an Xbox game that's being pushed out there, and it's called Kodu. And it's basically saying that it allows you to build a world and program everything in it. So there's an in-house graphical language that's basically a proprietary language that comes with this thing. And it gives you to have reactive state machines. You get multi-agent concurrent systems. So basically, you can have everything interact with everything else, and this is all in the Xbox 360. I thought it was really interesting, and it's going to be funny to see exactly what you can create out of these kind of sandbox games. This is a ultimate sandbox, so I wanted to pass it along to everybody out there. This just looks fantastic. It'd be kind of interesting if you could actually save different routines and have them live beyond or outside of the game. So Next little thing we have up for you here was actually sent in by one of our listeners via Twitter, so thank you very much, James. This is called the E-Rocket Bike. Now, there's a couple questions I have about this, but the idea behind this is it's an electric motorcycle that only runs when you pedal. So I don't know if it's a direct result, you know, like you can charge it up this much and it allows you to do that, or if it's just a way to modulate the actual speed of the bike. So the gentleman who invented it, Stefan Gulas, actually said that it amplifies the effort you put into it by a factor of 50. So I don't know if the fact that, you know, you turning the pedals once, I don't know how much harder it is than a regular bicycle to pedal, but they show you him doing speeds up to 50 miles an hour. So that's pretty fantastic. The only thing is that it's going to cost you roughly $40,000 to actually buy one. So in case you don't have that kind of cash laying around, you can head on over there and just watch the video and dream for a time when this might become a reality. All right, now, that about wraps it up here for the GeekCruft section of the Caffeination Podcast. Next on stop for the food and caffeinated bits, so it's going to be kind of, we're going to run down some of the funny things that I found this week. I can't tell you the amount of strange information that's been coming into the podcast recently. It's been kind of a lot of disjointed news stories and stuff, so I'm trying to kind of fit them together into the correct order and how I think that you'll like them and not. So if you follow over at caffeination.tumblr.com, I'm going to be putting a lot of the other stories that don't seem to quite make the cut here. I have a feeling this episode might be a little bit shorter than the other ones out there because it's I have next to no energy. I'm not even going to lie. So I already told you that today's coffee was actually a French press Sumatran that I roasted in the backyard. I'm hopefully going to be doing a video and an article about my experience with home roasting after I'm pretty sure that I have it down to a certain way where I think it actually looks interesting. I mean, roasting's kind of a funny thing so far, and I'm really, really enjoying it, so I got to tell you that. All right, moving right along. First thing that we have up for you here is lightsaber chopsticks. Now you can be awesome and eat noodles at the same time. I don't know what else to tell you except for the fact this is really cool. Apparently this is one of the giveaways or prizes that's actually going to be given out at the San Diego Comic-Con. I've never been to a Comic-Con, but this is the kind of thing that would make me want to go because it's being given out. Basically there. They're called, chop sabers. So they look like two little, they have red, they have green, and they have blue, and they also have an R2-D2 glass and a C-3PO glass. So that alone is enough to make me want to really lust after these things because I think they're pretty cool because it stays with the form factor of a lightsaber. I have a lightsaber spoon in work that I use all the time. It has a plastic thing on the front end, has the lightsaber thing on the back. So it looks perfect except for the fact that no lightsaber out there is shaped like a spoon except mine. It was a prize in cereal a while ago. It was before we even had kids, and my wife was like, you want this cereal? I said, yeah, because it has a lightsaber spoon inside. There's not too many prizes that actually come inside of cereal boxes anymore, so not only was I excited for that, I was also really excited for that. Hey, it's a lightsaber. It lights up when you're trying to eat your milk, and you can make little whooshy noises as it's going into your mouth. All right, next little thing we have up for you here is Green Glass Company turns beer bottles into drinking glasses. There's certain kinds of beer bottles out there, such as Rolling Rock, Corona, and a couple other ones that actually use painted-on labels. This is really kind of cool, but there's a company out there that's actually cutting the top of the bottle off, milling it down so it's nice and smooth lip on it, and they're selling you the glasses that come after this. So for a pack of four, you're going to pay $32.50 for recycled glass. I'm pretty sure they wash them. I don't know if what they wash four beer bottles in to actually make them worth $32.50 because I'm pretty sure the process used to create these things is not incredibly difficult. In fact, I'm pretty sure my dad with his glass cutting equipment in the basement could probably whip up a couple batches of these. But I don't know, maybe they have to pay licensing to Rolling Rock, you know, to use the recycled containers that come in there. I thought it was a really cool idea. I thought it was really interesting. But at the same point in time, I'm looking at this going, that's just an insanely high price point. I mean, yes, regular glasses are expensive. If you want a set of four good glasses, then you're going to pay, you know, a decent amount of money. But, you know, it's beer bottles. I just don't get it. All right, next little thing we have up for you here is a light-up Kincaid painting. You heard me here correctly. This is a Thomas Kincaid little portrait of a snow-covered house that's wrapped around a mug. And as you put hot liquid in there, the lights on the house light up. So for $20, you too can get your very own. Well, they don't actually light up. It just turns into a version of the painting where the house is lit from the inside. I think it would be really cool if it actually did light up. But they're saying it's an illuminating Kincaid, so just basically it's it's color-changing paint that's on there that changes the dark windows in the house to light windows. I'm not sure which one's actually the Thomas Kinkade painting, whether or not it's the inviting one with the house all lit up or it's the dark-windowed one. I'm pretty sure it's the lit one. So I just wanted to kind of pass that along because I thought it was kind of fun and interesting. Now, we have a very serious article that's out there. Now, I don't know how often that I've talked about this, but coffee and Alzheimer's disease is caffeine and Alzheimer's disease has been in the news a lot. And you don't get very much straight and narrow information out there. Nobody really breaks it down for you exactly what all the different studies are saying because the news media isn't in the habit of actually linking directly to the article. Now, one of the people who listens to this podcast from time to time, Michael Allen Smith, also the person who does I Need Coffee and a CoffeeHero.com, wrote a fantastic article which barely starts to take some of these people to task on the fact that they never actually link back to the scientific documentation that supports what they're saying. This is very basic internet 101 stuff, that if you're going to make a comment, if you're going to make a statement and you want to be considered fact, you have to link back to the source that kind of verifies it. Why wouldn't they actually link direct to the research that they're talking about? Is that because they couldn't take the liberties that they do? I mean, who knows? Well, Michael actually kind of did the legwork for everybody else and actually linked directly to the article and put a couple of snippets of there. They say he linked directly to the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease, Volume 17, Number 3, July 2009, page 661 to 680 is where the article is listed. And then he cut a little piece out of it. And he says basically that the abstract, which is up there, says that caffeine both prevents and reverses the effects and characteristics of Alzheimer's disease. The way that the actual experiment went is they had mice that were approximately similar in mental capacity and age and diminished mental return to people who were 70 years old. They said 18 to 19 month old mice actually have the same kind of mental capacity as somebody who's like 70 years old. They had an aged effect on their memory and different things like that. So they put them all through all kinds of different tests. I guess the maze wasn't what it was when they were only 12 weeks old, but still. And then they started giving these mice doses of caffeine. There was a control group, and then there was a 4 to 5 week dosage period. They said that the mice that received the caffeine exhibited vastly superior working memory compared to the continuing impairment of the control transgenic mice. So that is to say that they're saying that in mice, the effects of aging, the effects of the long-term degradation of mental stability and stuff like that is basically reversed and halted by the influx of larger amounts of caffeine. Now, there's going to be a lot of tweaking to actually find the proper dosage and stuff like this, but they're saying that there's significant improvements on a lot of different things. So it's going to be kind of cool. All right, now moving right along to something a little bit less serious, but no less snobby. All right, we have Wine and Cleese, at least that's what I'm calling it. One of my favorite comedians is actually John Cleese of Monty Python fame. So he actually created a movie, basically. It's a 43-minute long movie, so it was probably an hour long with commercials, called Wine for the Confused, where he decided to take the snobbery out of enjoying wine, where he talked about the three great whites and the three great red grapes. But it's a great little run-through, and it tells you why wines are the way they are, how you can enjoy them, and that you don't need to spend $200 on a bottle of expensive wine. Some of the most interesting stuff that he'd had was he had a bunch of his friends over, and he had six wines or five wines for everybody to taste. The wines ranged in price from a $5 bottle to a $200 bottle. It was kind of cool because he said, one person's $5 bottle was another person's $200. So everybody's tastes varied so much that you really didn't need to spend a ton of money on the different wines. And he actually interviewed somebody at one of the wine stores who actually said that a lot of the larger and more prestigious wine companies are actually starting second labels where they can sell the overproduction of grapes. So, there's one person who makes an incredibly good Chardonnay. The person neglected to mention who it was, but, they showed you the back of a bottle. They say they make a very good Chardonnay, but there's so many grapes out there right now. They have such high yield and such high production on this that they found out that they could just start up a second label and sell the other stuff that wasn't quite up to snuff, or they just wanted to get more money, but they could sell it at a less price without, or at a lesser price without harming the prestige of the higher of the higher ranked wines out there. So I thought that was really cool and wanted to pass it along. All right, next thing we have up for you here is Ring Pops. If you've ever seen the iconic candy that looks like a tiny little ring on your finger, this is a different way of going about it. It's they're called Tovolo Freezer Jewel Popsicle Molds. So it's basically a bunch of popsicle molds like you used to get. Your mom would make like orange juice or Kool-Aid popsicles and pull them out. But instead of having the stick at the bottom, it has a little ring so you can actually put them on your finger. This is a great idea. And, there's six little molds in each one, and they're relatively inexpensive. they're only $10 for a mold that has six and has, the six little rings and the container for the different things. So, hey, it's kind of cool. All right, next little thing that's up here. This is incredibly silly. How to open a banana? You've been doing it wrong all your life. You need to learn from monkeys. Now, I'm not talking about, you need to, cut it with your fingernail just a little bit before you pull it open. It basically says that everybody is opening bananas completely upside down. If you invert your banana so that the stem is at the bottom and you pinch the knob at the very end, it splits in half. Then you can pull the two halves down and it opens like magic. I tried it this morning. I'm embarrassed to say that it worked unbelievable. So everyone that I know who have ever seen eating a banana, you've all opened the banana incorrectly. The monkeys have been doing it right. Now, if they could only get that volume of Shakespeare done right, we'd be ahead of everything. I'd like to thank my buddy Jimmy for sending me the link to Bacon Vodka. I'm not going to say that on this topic, except for the fact that I think it's incredibly weird. I would like to try it, but I would never buy a bottle of it. And then the last little thing that we have for you here is shark fin ice cubes. It's another little ice cube mold, but it actually is an inverted thing so that when you drop the cube in there, there's a tiny little fin going around. I thought that was pretty cool and wanted to share it with everybody else out there. All right, that about wraps it up. And despite the fact, every time I tell somebody that the episode's going to be a little bit truncated, it always ends up going over. So thank you so much for sticking around. This has been a great episode. I think we kind of hit our stride about halfway through. Told you it was kind of even on either side. So thank you so much for listening to the podcast. This has been episode number 349. That's a ton of episodes. The next one's going to be 350. I mean, that's even bigger than this one. It's one more. That's what we keep doing. One more every time. All right, thank you so much for listening. Stay caffeinated, people.